This is Business Rockstars, and we are joined today by Colt Seaman, CMO and co-founder of Miku. Colt, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
So for those who are not familiar with you, give our audience some background. So you helped out with Red Bull early on. You produced commercials for Beats by Dre. Yep. How did that lead you to starting a high-tech baby monitor?
Well, it was crazy. I was shooting different commercials all over the world. And one time I was shooting ads in Asia. And I was over there. I met some people that were wanting to kind of develop this new technology. And when they told me about it, I thought it was black magic. So I bought a flight from Hong Kong right to New Jersey to see the new tech. And then as soon as they showed it to me, I was like, I will stop everything I'm doing to bring this to the world because it's so revolutionary.
Wow. So what did you do? What was your first step? Did you quit producing? Were you doing that on the side? How did it kind of lead to
that? Well, I was doing some commercials there and there across the country. And then when I got involved with Miku, I was like, I need to stop everything I'm doing, do this full time, really like sit down and develop the brand, the name, the style, the look, and take a real good look at the industry and how we can like change it.
Awesome. So what is Miku? Tell our audience.
Yeah, so Miku is a revolutionary baby monitor that can see your child's breathing in high accuracies, all in real time, no delay. We have a Qualcomm chip set inside, so we don't rely on the cloud for any computing. So after you set your device up, it can work off your router. So if your internet goes down, you still see your breathing in real time and sleep reports.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And what was the first step after you kind of created the prototype? How long did it really take from prototype to market?
Well, actually, the prototyping was done a while back. My business partner, Eric, he's like the true genius behind this technology. He developed a lot of different wireless sensing technologies for a lot of defense firms that could actually see breathing medically grade accurate from far distances away or close. And when he had a baby 4.5 years ago, he looked at the current solution and bought the most expensive baby monitor on the market for $300.
Yeah.
Brought it home, took a look at it, standard SD video, like bad quality, no reliability, and it didn't do breathing. So he was like, I can make this better. So he was testing it for years before I even met him. And he used his own baby as a guinea pig, like, hey, I'm going to use my own kid to like test this out. And that's when I met him. And when I met him, it was just a box with wires coming out of it. From there, we sat down, named it Miku, designed the product, and brought it to life.
And why Miku?
Miku means beautiful sky in Japanese.
Oh.
And actually, the very first baby monitor ever invented was by Isamu Noguchi, who's like one of the most prolific Art Deco architects and product designers ever.
Wow.
And after that came out in 1937, baby monitors kind of took a step forwards back and backwards and backwards in design. So we took it from the very first baby monitor in 1937 and designed this really aesthetically pleasing baby monitor.
Wow. And how was it or how is it disrupting the baby monitor space? Because you have to gain trust of parents. A lot of people are first-time parents. How do you kind of gain that trust and also disrupt the market?
Yeah. So when you first launch, of course, you're going to launch. You're new to this technology, new to this space. So A, you have to build parent trust. That that doesn't come overnight. That comes after like 6 months, really building the trust of parents and building that word of mouth that people actually use it and say, this thing really works.
Right.
Like, this is crazy. And also looking at the space, no one in the baby industry really developed a real brand, like a Dyson, a baby product, something that's like, yeah, you're going to pay more for it, but it works, it's trusted, and it's tested at the end of the day. Too many people come into this industry saying, hey, here's a technology that I made work in a lab for 1 second and rush to parent anxiety and teaching people and having fear-based marketing. We're kind of taking a whole different approach. Like, our thing's been tested. And from there, our marketing is all about having you as parents have better sleep and how the device works. We're never telling you your baby's going to die. Where every single company is taking that approach and it's not the way to go in marketing.
What challenges did you face first starting out? And how did you guys pivot and kind of work around those challenges?
Challenges where every tech company has challenges. Challenges of the right messaging, the right branding, to even really nailing the tech and the design of it, because you could just take the product and run with it. But our challenges were like, that were fun challenges, where how do we make it better? How do we look at every single competitor in this space and see what they're doing wrong and how we need to improve it? Mm-hmm. From the design of a custom base plate to actually having cord safety so nothing falls in the crib and can strangulize a baby, to custom conduit that goes down the wall and the kid can't grab it, to a custom stand that's weighted that if a kid hits it, won't fall over to anyone. It will be held by the crib.
Wow. And how did you guys come up with the branding? Because if you go on your website, your branding's really clean yeah. and neat, and you guys have really conveyed your message. Yeah. Awesome.
The branding is done by our team. Instead of going to an outsourced agency, I actually built my own internal ad agency in-house with a great creative director, Scott, who came over from RPA and was one of the lead creative directors. And our team of like marketing and social people and us really sat down. We're like, looked at brands we really love and we want to emulate that into the baby industry, but also build a brand that parents can trust.
And how do you make sure that you're staying on top of customer service? Because that's obviously so important.
So with customer service, we actually hired Nick DeFrance, who was like one of the head of customer service at Ring Doorbell.
Oh, cool.
So
we took Ring.
So we took a real serious approach to that because everyone else, we called all of our competitors as well, testing their systems, seeing how they would work, how they function, how they're failing.
Right.
But we realized no one had this like true white glove service. Like when you call in, we built a whole back end that we can solve and diagnose problems right away on your device. Mm. So we can be like, hey, there's something weird going on, or hey, you're on old firmware, or your app is old.
Right.
We wanted to solve this stuff right away so you're not, because like, look, you're a parent. If your device stops working, you're going to get pissed. You're a parent. You got a kid. You got a life to
live. You don't have time for that.
Exactly. So we want to solve those things right away. And if something happens, we will replace the unit right away. And we give refunds in 30 days if someone's not happy with it, because we want to make sure everyone has a great experience when buying a Miku.
And if you could go back in time when you were first starting out Miku, what would be the one piece of advice you would give yourself?
Oh, man. Things take a lot longer than expected. That's my biggest thing. Mm. I've realized like, when you're going into this kind of tech world, you're like, I could get it done in a month.
Right.
Plan 2 to 3 months to do it. Everyone else is like, done, done, done. And you can get things done quickly, but it's not you. It's all the different vendors and people you're working with. Everyone's a little slower than expected.
Amazing. We'll be right back and dive into how Miku is different than all the other baby monitors out there. This is Business Rockstars. This is my amazing guest, Colt Seaman, CMO and co-founder of Miku.
One step away from homelessness being that paycheck. I was just one paycheck away. So when I got there on Friday, no paycheck. There was probably another 14 people standing outside the front door who had the same conversation I had with my boss. He had skipped town, gone. And I called my landlord and said, I can't pay rent. This is what happened. He said, I already gave you 30 days. I can't give you another. And that was literally, you know, day one of going into homelessness. I was in Las Vegas. I was on the streets. I didn't have a couch to sleep on or friends. I had a couch at the time. I didn't have a car. My car got repoed, so I couldn't sleep in my car. I literally slept in abandoned buildings and basically ate wherever I could find food, which included, you know, dumpsters and garbage cans. My mom was like my ace in the hole. Yeah, I expected her to say what like most moms would say, which was, you know, don't worry about it. We'll buy you a plane ticket back to Jersey. You can sleep in your old bedroom. I'll make you a cup of soup, whatever, right? And she didn't say those things. Instead, she said, why don't you just go find a shelter? And very next call was to Eric, which was my last boss, my boss from years prior to. And he essentially said, I have this office space, and this office space is very tiny. I was thinking about starting a new business, but I'm not doing it now. The best thing about this office space, because it was so tiny, was that all the utilities were included. So I had electricity, but what was really cool is I had this really, really old desktop computer on a table that's like six foot table that had internet access because utilities were included. So I took this opportunity to spend 24 hours a day online, creating a resume, submitting it to a job application, being on Craigslist all day long, being on Monster all day long. And there was a lot of rejection, a ton of rejection. And it was all based on surface level. It was based on how I looked. When I'd walk in and people saw me, obviously I looked homeless. When I walked into the lobby, they'd come running out from behind the receptionist desk and go, hey, you can't come in here. And I'd be like, but I'm here for the job. Sure you are, you can't come in here. I forgave her for everything, basically. And what I look back on it now, just knowing that she had to do exactly what she had to do for me at that time. And today what I do is I extend that opportunity to others who are in the exact same position that I was 3 years ago.
I don't care if you work hard, and neither does the market. Mm. Everybody works hard. The successful people are the people who sacrifice more. If your habits are just like your friends, where they're going to Coachella and the music festivals and all those other things, or watching Netflix on binging, and you're doing all the same things as them, get out of here. You're not an entrepreneur. So if you're willing to, like, have an honest conversation with yourself. Are you really willing to not go to those birthday parties, stay up till 3 a.m, and those stupid things like eat Top Ramen forever? That's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth. And if you're not willing to do those things, get out of here, because you're going to lose. That's the only thing I can promise you.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day, watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, Wow, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started.
HomeAdvisor.
We are back with Colt Seaman, CMO and co-founder of Niku. Colt, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, so show us what we got here.
So this is Miku. This is our packaging. It's a contactless baby monitor that can see your child's breathing in real time with no delay. When you get it, this is our packaging.
Clean.
You'll get it like this. Yeah, very clean. Features on the sides. And then on top of that, we have a custom room renders. We even actually hand-painted that.
Wow.
So we don't take anything. We actually build our own rooms.
Love that.
When it comes like this, you'll get the Miku baby monitor, our tagline always there. Mm-hmm. Then on top of that, we're the first to offer a custom measuring tape like this that allows you, A, to measure the middle of your crib or the height you want to mark it to the wall.
Okay.
Then also a custom base plate you can put to the wall and a level, because to me, if it's not level, I'll have an anxiety attack and perfection. And then the first to offer a custom screwdriver so you can like actually screw it to the wall, because I swear I'm one of those people that's like, where's my screwdriver?
All the time.
Exactly.
Always lost.
And then another step, besides being a very advanced product, we're the first to actually have safety and design. So we actually built a custom cord with the first ever like cord stopper on it.
Okay.
So when you snap it in here, it can hold 50 to 55 pounds, where most baby monitors, those cords will come out with 1 to 3 pounds of pressure.
Right.
So a kid can dangle from this and not pulled into the crib.
Okay.
And then on top of that, to develop a custom conduit like this, that'll snap in and go down the wall.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no
solution. You guys have thought of everything.
Trying to. It's kind of like the Apple / Dyson of baby products. It's a really well-designed and tested product.
And tell us why contactless monitoring.
Why contactless monitoring? Other solutions out there require you to touch the baby. Mm-hmm. Problem with that, and they're only one sensor modality. Mm-hmm. So when they touch the baby can like move around. It'll give you inaccurate readings. The baby will rip it off, like any kind of wearable. A baby wants to rip it off. American Association of Pediatrics doesn't back any wearables because of that. Mm-hmm. On top of that, other solutions out there, such as other baby monitors that do image processing or just a radar solution alone. Again, they have their strengths and weaknesses.
Right.
Where we're different is that we use image processing, radar, and dual microphone array, stack it together with sensor fusion to 26 different channels, squeeze it together with our algorithm, and then put it together as well. And with that, it's in real time and very accurate. We're in a bunch of clinical studies right now with crazy white papers that will come out this summer that show how accurate our device is.
I love it. And about how many customers do you guys have right now?
Right now, we're about 1,200 customers since launch in January, but it's growing pretty fast. We're going to be in Apple stores this summer and then moving into other retailers throughout fall into winter.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
And your company is about 2 years old, and you're starting a Series B to expand into other markets this summer. Tell me about your experience with fundraising and kind of tips for entrepreneurs who are looking to do the same?
Going into this, I had no idea. I was so green. I've never raised capital before. But what I realized when we're going out and doing pitches and when you're first starting a company, a lot of VCs are going to tell you, your valuation's too high. You come back to us later. And you realize they're just wanting to see more. But when you show them more, they still come back and say the same thing. So what's been very beneficial for us is that I've gone out to a lot of my friends that own huge tech companies saying, I want to do this and revolutionize the world mm-hmm. with this new tech. They came on board and started backing me. From that, a lot of the VCs started perking their ears up like, okay, what is this? What's right. happening? And we started our Series A and very luckily, we closed our Series A last week. All the money just by private individuals and people that own massive assisted living facilities to doctors to a lot of different pharmaceutical people because they see the tech actually going into different markets versus a lot of the VCs, they really didn't understand the tech. But luckily, getting these people that understand the industry that mm-hmm. I want to go into, have them invest in us.
Amazing. And what tips do you have for entrepreneurs, people who want to start, grow, or fund their own business, but yeah. they have a fear of failure?
I would never have a fail of failure because it's one of those things is that you'll fail at a lot of things. I've failed at so many things in my life and okay. that failure has helped me like step back up to go, okay, don't do that one again.
Right.
But also asking people and getting advice from people that have done it and having them really like just ask those questions because if I went into this totally like blindsided, not knowing anything or having people that have done it before, mm-hmm. I probably would have made a lot more mistakes. But getting that wisdom from people that have raised capital before, have started tech companies, going and researching like crazy because that's helped me not make as many mistakes as I could. But of course, everyone will make mistakes.
Yeah. And tell me about the security features on this because you hear kind of yeah. some high-tech monitors get hacked into and it's scary for parents. How is yours different?
Ours is completely different because every device out there uses just software protection. So they have to send their keys to the factory to get put on. Hmm. For us, we actually have hardware protection. We have a crypto chip in here.
Okay.
So it's military grade and no one has access to our keys. Has anti-tampering on it. So if someone tries to get our key, it'll fail right away and destroy the whole device. So our biggest thing is that it's one of the safest, actually, IoT cameras on the market, but we're going to start putting our stuff through like HackerOne and all these other hacker organizations to even test it, even to make it even safer.
And how many employees do you guys have right now?
Currently 26 employees.
And how important would you say company culture is to the success of your business?
Huge. You have to make sure everyone in your company believes where you're going, believes in the company, and understands the vision of it. Because if everyone's just like there to collect a paycheck or just there coming in and just working a little bit, you have to have them like have a little fire under their ass. I'll be completely honest. Like
right.
one of those things of like, we got to like come in every single day at 9 a.m. and just crush all day long to 5 p.m. Because mm-hmm. if they're coming in and just kind of being lazy, it's going to start affecting everyone on the team. So you have to do things that build team like spirit, go out in little adventures with them and like build like almost like a friendship and a good team around it. Because mm-hmm. if they're just an employee just doing their job, you will over time see them perform less.
Mm-hmm. And what is it like being the co-founder but also the CMO?
Exciting. It's one of those things that I have a vested interest in this company. So being the CMO of it as well, looking at how I'm going to create a different industry, how I'm going to market this product. But since I have that vested interest of being a co-founder, it's like I work every day.
Right.
other CMOs can have weekends off. I swear I'm working Saturdays and Sundays as well. And I'm still emailing and calling people and making things happen. So it's one of those things where I just feel like I'm never stopped working. But it shows in the company and how we're moving really fast because honestly, 40 hours a week is not enough time to work. You won't change the world on 40 hours a week.
So you do not believe in work-life balance?
You have to have some work-life balance, but in the meantime, I'm just working as much as I can.
Yeah. And what are your top three tips for entrepreneurs who want to start their own business?
Biggest three tips. One is patience isn't a virtue. Persistence is. Being there and knocking on the door, calling people, making things happen. Because the only things that are going to happen is when you make it happen. Mm-hmm. Things are just not going to happen around you. You have to make it. That's why I think persistence is very key. The other thing is so many people out there are going to offer you the world saying, hey, this is what I can do for you, all this great stuff. But they're really going to go to the side street corner, buy a little mini globe and give it to you and goes, that's the world I'm giving you.
Right.
And so be prepared that there's going to be a lot of people that will promise you the moon and literally deliver you a little marble.
Yeah.
The other thing is making sure that you have enough capital. The biggest thing, even in tech or any company, a lot of people want to just raise a little bit to what they need. Always raise more. It's the biggest thing because you don't know how long your next round will take. So be prepared for that.
Well, I'm excited to see where Miku is. And thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
This is Business Rockstars. That was my amazing guest, Colt Seaman, CMO and co-founder of Miku.
Here's farmer and landowner John Prue.
We purchased land about 3 years ago, and there was an old farmstead on there with trees. We were going to clear the land so we could farm through it. We thought we knew where the pipe was, so we didn't call to get it located. The work on our property led to the damage of a light crude pipeline. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but it could have been much worse.
Never assume the location or depth of underground lines. Always call 811 or visit clickbeforeyoudig.com before you start work. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that...
Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining us is Eric Hsu, the CEO of Single Grain. Eric, pleasure to have you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a quick recap. What does Single Grain do?
Yeah, so we're a digital marketing agency. We work with Fortune 500 companies to venture-backed startups, helping them grow their businesses online using paid advertising.
So we were just talking about how most businesses struggle in the areas of one or both, generating leads and or converting leads.
Mm-hmm.
We go into businesses and that's kind of where I think both of our businesses thrive is we go into other businesses and help them with the life, blood, and oxygen of every organization. And that is their ability to generate income and sales. And as marketers, we go in and we help businesses with this. But what do you feel like are the bottlenecks that are holding people back from generating leads?
I think it's a lack of patience. You know, people want to see things happen quickly. If you look at the tech world, when you get a round of financing, you're looking to put that money into paid advertising and grow as quickly as possible, right? You're looking to buy your way into customers. And I think the thing is, you know, people talk about content marketing too. That's you're playing the long game, and that's anywhere from a 12 to 18 month journey before you even start to see anything. I'll give you an example. I was looking at my numbers for one of my podcasts that I have. My God, for the first year, it was just flat. And then it starts to slowly take off at the 12 to 18 month mark. And then it just starts to go up and to the right. So I think that's the thing. It's a lack of patience and a lack of willing to, grind it out.
What about for these big companies though, that have been established? Maybe they've been in the game and their company's been around for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Because you said you work with a lot of Fortune 500s, the majority of which have been around for decades. So I feel like the patience part makes sense for a lot of the beginning entrepreneurs and business owners. But what about for the big ones? Because you said you work with a lot of these big ones. I feel like, you know, you can be around for a long time and be impatient the whole way. Mm-hmm. But why do you feel like these big companies who are so established hire a company like you to come in?
The big companies are slow and there's a lot of red tape around them. There's a really big one in the top 10 right now that we work with. And it's just really hard to push anything through. New ideas, everything requires a lot of approval, requires, 30 to 40 days. And when you're doing marketing stuff, you have to move quickly. I'm sure you know. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to make changes on the fly and test very quickly. Some people call it high tempo testing. And I think that's the thing. It's the level of bureaucracy out there and it's the level of red tape that slows things down. And when you're slow, you can't really get anything done.
So how can you make sure that you're moving fast, but doing it right? Because a lot of times we see entrepreneurs who come out of the gate and they're trying to hit that home run, right? They think that, oh, my company's gonna do $1 million in the first year because I saw this guy and 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 that guy and that girl and that girl online crushing it, making millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And so why do you think, you know, how do you think, I guess is the better way to phrase it, how do you think people can make sure that they succeed early on while moving fast?
Yeah. So I think moving fast is definitely, I mean, you definitely want to have, you know, 90 day goals, you know, on where you want to be. Okay. Here's where we're at today and here's where we want to be. So there's a tool out there that just was released. I think it's like a free 45 day trial or whatever it's called, Growth Hackers Projects. And then you can literally put it, you know, here's where we want to be and here's what's going to happen. You can have your whole team involved and integrates with a lot of different tools out there. But I think it's important to set numbers and then go for them. Sometimes, you know, if you want to get crazy, you can have daily check-ins where you're recording the numbers every single day. Some people get that crazy. I like to do it perhaps weekly. Okay. But you just want to have, you know, whatever gets measured gets managed at the end of the day. So you want to have that. But at the same time, I think you also have to temper expectations. Just because somebody else, you know, got to a million or you know, 10 million or whatever, you know, we're seeing all those stories out there, but it took a very long time to get there. So I think there has to be that level of understanding.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if you want to get results fast, I think the fastest way to do it is to follow the right recipe. You know, if you're trying to build $1 million business in your first year, or maybe you've been in business for 3 years and you're stuck at $250,000 or whatever the number is, and you want to get to that 7-figure mark or 8-figure mark, I think the best way to get there is to simply invest in learning the recipe. You can call it a blueprint, a formula, science, an equation, whatever you want to call it. I'll call it a recipe because it's an easy analogy. Mm. But if you and I are average chefs and we want to be world-class chefs, at least the fastest way to make a world-class meal would be to invest in the recipe and the ingredients.
Exactly.
So if you and I are terrible chefs, but we had the ingredients and the recipe to create a Michelin star meal, we're going to do it. It's mm-hmm. a recipe and we have the ingredients. You can't not do it. But I feel like most people are following the wrong recipe in their business, and that's why they're failing.
Exactly.
And it's a direct result of, you know, this is why the end result, the product is the way it is, because if we reverse engineer the result, it's because of the things you did, the recipe you followed. Mm-hmm. And I think the fastest way to get results is to just invest in learning a proven recipe that's going to yield the results that you want. What about company culture? That's something that I feel like a lot of people don't talk about because either it's just a topic that I feel like it's not that fun. It's kind of a boring topic in some cases. And a lot of people aren't doing a good job of creating company culture, but I know you guys are. So what are some things that you're doing to create awesome environments for your team to thrive?
Yeah, culture is not like a fun thing to talk about. You'd rather talk about marketing and sales at the end of the day, right? But the thing is, if you're competing against bigger companies out there, like the Googles or the Facebooks of the world, you have to create a fun environment to work at. So for us, you know, we talked about this earlier, you know, some of this is becoming more standardized, but for us, we only work, you know, 3 days a week out of the office. Most of our team is remote.
Which is a trend that's happening now.
Yeah.
Remote working. I mean, a lot of people are going to become independent contractors working from home. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a more common theme. There's actually $1 billion businesses that are now shifting over to having the majority of their workforce be, you know, remote.
Exactly.
And I think that that's interesting that you guys have come up with a way to do that. CEO of Single Grain, Eric Sue, is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. So Eric, we're talking about company culture. I want to know, how did you come up with this whole remote working thing? I know it's not something that you created or invented, mm-hmm. but how did you decide that that was the right move for your business?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I used to work for this online education company and 60% of our team was remote. And mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is completely new. I've never done this before. And it actually worked really well for us. As long as you have the right meeting cadence scheduled with your managers or with the other people on the team, and then for us, we always did at least, you know, two on-site meetings where everyone got to meet each other. You know, we kept the glue together and you know, we had the right element, the right mix of kind of meeting in person and also, you know, collaborating online. So that worked well for us.
How do you hold people accountable though? Because I feel like that's the tough part, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as people are no longer in the office, and not that being in the office means that you should be or could be micromanaging them and things like that, because nobody likes that.
Yep.
And if you have to micromanage people, it's the wrong people. But at the end of the day, the distinction I'm trying to make here is, how do you hold people accountable when they're working remote and they're not in the office and you can't see them, hear them, get that face-to-face meeting?
Great question. So we do with direct reports, there's a one-on-one every day with their managers. And then the other thing is there's a variety of tools that we use. So we use Slack, for example, but then there's a plugin called Geekbot that will do a daily stand-up check-in on, okay, what'd you do yesterday? What are you working on today? So everyone can kind of see what's going on. And at the end of the week on Fridays, we use a tool called 15-5 that will send a report based, we'll send questions saying, okay, how'd you feel about this week? What did you learn this week? What were your big accomplishments this week? What were your struggles? Just a bunch of questions there and like some random questions thrown in. And then everyone can kind of see how things are going. And from my level, from an admin level, I can see how are people feeling over time? How is it trending? And then we have a question in there. How much have you grown this week? How much did you learn, right? And that's also, we're seeing where that's trending. So for us, we're able to measure kind of what's going on. And we're also very focused on helping people grow as well. So we're investing in their education too. And we're able to track that too.
So there's obviously probably a list of things that you wish you knew when you were starting your business. Creating great company culture probably being one, because a lot of people don't think about that as the most important thing in year one. Mm-hmm. So if you had to go back in the past and you were sitting down at coffee with your younger self in your first year of business, what would one piece of advice be that you want to share with yourself?
Well, we already covered patience. So I'll give another one. I think it's the team, it's hiring, right? Whether you played competitive games or you played football, basketball, it's always about the team at the end of the day. It's not about one person. If you're going to create anything great at all, it has to be, you have to have great people on the team. And you can't say, I hired that bad person. That was a bad egg, caused our company to go down. At the end of the day, if you're the leader, it's your fault. So you better have a really good hiring process in place, because it's the team that's going to get you to, whatever you're trying to get to. I remember, Bill Gates said, Microsoft wasn't built off of him. It was built off the first 20 team members. So that's what it's really all about.
So what if you can't afford to hire these people? How can they still build a team?
Yeah. So I think if you're starting out, you don't have anything yet. If we're talking, you don't have the resources for a team. I think
I'm in year one. I'm trying to generate my first 5-10K a month, to be able to pay the bills and keep growing the business.
Right.
And I'm using a lot of that money just to sustain my own lifestyle and keep the doors open.
Yep.
Maybe it's an online business. Maybe it's a brick and mortar. But when it comes to hiring great people to help grow the business, what if I don't have the funds is the question. And so how can we make sure that they can still build a team? Kind of alluded at some of the different ways, bartering, deferred payment, equity incentives, things like that. Payments on results only, commission. But what do you think? What are some other things?
Yeah, I think those are certainly fine. But I think if we're even going before that, I think it's all about setting up the right systems and processes, documenting everything in place. That way you can scale. It's not all about you at the end of the day. You need to figure out the processes that you can grow. It sounds really boring, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, you can definitely work on commission and all that type of stuff. But I think if you're able to build these processes out and you're able to repeat things over and over, your revenues start to go up, then you can start to set aside, X amount to, for this specific hire. And then you can start to repeat this thing over and over. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day. Business is not that hard. You just have something, you make something people want and you create a process that's scalable. And then you just scale it.
What do you think is one of the most important things that entrepreneurs need to know when they're starting out? Because there's probably, a larger portion of people who are either wanting to become entrepreneurs or are in the beginning stage of an entrepreneur, year one, two, three. What do you think is the most important thing they need to know? We talked about patience being really good. And again, there could be 50 things, but what do you think is really important? Well, I think, if I'm going to help you out here, if I think there's 50 and I just pick one, I think hunger is one of the most important ones. We had Damon John from Shark Tank on here, and he was saying hunger is probably one of the most important ingredients for an entrepreneur because of a lot of reasons, right? Passion fuels hunger, I believe. And so I think in the beginning stages, you get knocked down a lot as an entrepreneur. You have these expectations of what you think is going to happen, meaning you can make money, you're going to meet these people, whatever. You're going to have this massive growth in the beginning. You're all excited. And then it doesn't always work out that way. And it's hard to stay hungry. But what do you think is another important trait?
No, like you just mentioned, I was just going to say, absolutely. You get punched in the face every single day.
Yeah.
Something you don't expect is going to happen. I think, you talk about hunger. I think persistence is the main thing. You have to keep going at it. That's what it takes to really get to the end of the road. I think that's what the difference is between a successful and an unsuccessful entrepreneur.
Yeah.
They're just a little more persistent.
Eric Hsu, pleasure to have you on the show, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
How can you make extra money even with a full-time job? Hi, I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Eliminating financial stress is a dream for all of us. While time is a limited resource and you may be bound to a 9-to-5 job, you'd still like to make some extra cash, right? Well, here's how. 1. Start a service business. An online presence is the best way to start. Dinner service, marketing, freelance writing are a few ways to get up and running quickly and score some side money. 2. Invest in real estate, perhaps a condo or a small property. Even commercial real estate is a great way to earn passive income. Finally, leverage what you're already doing. If you know how to say teach, your skill set can prove valuable to somebody else, so much so they'll pay you. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month. That can cover a car payment or pay back loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They're super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Sign the green card.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's check in with Pat O'Brien.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to Business Rockstars. This edition is CEO Roundtable. My old friend Bill Dallas is here, co-founder of Cloud Virga, and back to the Jim Nance days. Is Jim still a scratch golfer?
He's a pretty good golfer. I wouldn't say he's scratch anymore, but he's pretty good.
He is good at
it. Yeah, he compares himself to Fred, to couples.
Anyway, Bill Dallas is here, and Greg Spiridellis from Jib Jab.
Jib Jab.
Jib Jab.
How you doing?
We love Jib Jab. Both have successful, flourishing companies. We want to talk about the idea of being a CEO. Did you always want to be a CEO?
No, but I always wanted to be in charge.
Well, that was a better answer.
Yeah, and I think I thrust myself into being in charge pretty early, and I wasn't ready to be a CEO. I think you learn sort of the CEO skills maybe a little later.
Yeah.
But I always wanted to be the guy.
Well, one of the skills is hiring people.
Yeah.
How do you find the right people, or how do you know you're finding the right people?
Yeah, I think it's like being very deliberate about like what are your company's values? What are the things that make you successful as an entrepreneur? For example, me and my brother, we went through an exercise actually with the whole company about what are our values? And then it's really making sure that you're looking at every potential hire through the lens of those values. Do they match up on, are they passionate about what they do? Mm-hmm. Do they have a track record of innovation? Are they someone that you're going to, you know, is going to be dependable when you need someone to step up? Are they self-directed? Mm-hmm. So I think it's like just identifying what's the secret sauce that makes you tick and lining up candidates against it.
And there's a talent to that, right? Otherwise you're screwed.
Yeah. And I think the talent is knowing what you want. And then the second talent probably is being a little bit patient in the sourcing and going through the process to look through a lot of people. Your tendency is we want to just hire somebody and bring them in because you need to fill a position. And the next thing you know, we've actually started testing. I don't know if you guys test a little bit, but we do some grit testing and not anything elaborate. Just want to know.
Not profiling.
No, we just want to know if you're, if you sort of fit.
Yeah.
What's the hardest thing we talked about? You never knew you'd be a CEO, but what's the hardest part besides everything?
I think probably the hardest part is raising capital. You know, growing, the pace of growing your business with the amount of cash. I mean, new businesses suck cash and take all your money, right? So you have to have a bunch of outlets in order to be able to do that. And, you know, people talk about starting up a business. That's really tough. But I just talk about sustaining a business because it has to get past its first or second hurdle. And they never go in a straight line.
And things change certainly in real estate and mortgage and all that, but especially in technology.
Yeah.
Changing by the hour, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, it's
how difficult does that make?
I mean, I think it's really hard. Like our business is constantly changing and new opportunities are opening up all the time. And so one of the hardest things for me as a CEO is moving an organization really quickly while at the same time, like conveying a sense of, no, there is like some, I'm not being erratic. Yeah. This is not like an off the cuff thing.
It's actually our plan.
Yeah. We're loyal, we're staying.
Yeah. And we're, you know, and we're actually, it's okay, folks. We're turning the boat in this direction, but it's actually a thoughtful response to an opportunity. And then communicating constantly. Mm-hmm. And the bigger the company, the harder that gets.
I think what Greg said too was important, that you know, you change is going to occur and keep happening. And so you look for people that you hire that can have core values that sort of fit, because you want that to be permanent, but you want everything else to be able to change.
Yeah. What's more important, core values or mission?
That's a good question.
You can answer everything jib-jab.
I would say, jib-jab. I think the mission is critical. Like, you need to know, why are we all like on this boat together? Right. You know, where are we going? What are we trying to accomplish? And I think like the values are how we get there. Right. So if you don't know where you're going, like knowing how you're going to get
there. And the core values, part of the metaphor, is when you put the jib out.
Yeah, exactly.
Out how to, there you how go. Get yourself.
You want my job?
How about you? Same thing.
I actually think that they go in order. Right. I think you've got to have a cause. And I go the other way. We've always called, I'm classically trained, BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal, which is different from your cause, which then leads into your core values. And those have to be consistent and aligned. And then eventually you get to whack-a-mole of what am I doing in 2016 and how are we going to do that? And trying to get the whole group to flock in one direction.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars, CEO Roundtable Edition. I'm Pat O'Brien. Bill Dallas is here. Greg Spirandellis from Jib Jab. I love saying Jib Jab. I'm your best.
I just love seeing my head on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm glad to hear it.
How do you differentiate yourself from competition?
I think strategically, I mean, I'm in a business, an industry that doesn't differentiate very well. So everybody gets the same loan, right? So if you want to get a 30-year fixed rate loan, how do you different? You can be Quicken and try to shoot a rocket off, or you can be Guaranteed Rate and try to have digital mortgage. So my view is you have to be very strategic at how you want to differentiate. Mm-hmm. And I think you differentiate with strategy and people, not cool lines and taglines.
All right. But different for you, because you're in competition with the entire internet.
Yeah.
To be as entertaining or more.
Yeah. Or fun. Yeah. Funny is, that's how we've evolved the business. Like, early on, we did political satire, a short form comedy video before YouTube existed. When YouTube came along, I said, there's no way we can compete with the collective universe of funny. Right. I mean, we're not that funny. So you look at like, where are there opportunities to create new experiences? And for us, we were really early on in Facebook and pioneering the platform and creating personalization. Mm-hmm. And now it's with messaging.
Yeah. Thanks both for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you very much.
Fun.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This has been CEO Roundtable Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. We'll see you next time.